Lieutenant.
All right, here we are, Common Sense Ohio. The year has almost passed us by. November 19th, 2025.
Always after Halloween.
It just,
boom, it you just got shoots like
Halloween, Thanksgiving, yeah. Christmas right around the corner. Next thing you know, you're plowing snow in January thinking, what
what
in the
happened?
Don't leave out New Year's.
Can I do it again? Can I do it again? Anyway, commonsenseohioshow.com. If you want the backlog, you want some, maybe you want to send us a question. Brought to you by Harper Plus Accounting. This day in history, we'll jump right to it. Gettysburg Address.
Was that today?
Today in history.
Wow.
So what's interesting, everybody, not everybody, but lots of folks remember the beginning, you know, the four score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this nation, you know, or brought forth on this kind of new nation. I mean, that's important. We should probably read that, I suppose. Four score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. But I did some digging down into the bowels, the end, the less quoted language. And he sort of takes on, I think, a little more here than what he ever did before this. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task of remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. So it's like everybody remembers the first, but what he's really saying is this is unfinished work, folks.
Yeah.
We got more to do.
Yeah.
You know, this proposition that all men are created equal, you know, this is the I'm going to call it really the second phase of the battle, because for those who say the nation was founded on this horrible, rotten notion of slavery and inequality, blah, blah, they're wrong. Our nation was founded despite that. At least that's my take on it.
Right.
Is that this was a debate, and it was a debate that, you know, maybe carried to its extreme back at the founding of our nation, we wouldn't have had a nation. We had to get something on paper, in other words. And, you know, even there's great dialogue between Jefferson and Adams at the end of their lives where they even talk about this. I'll butcher the quote, but it's like, I only regret, one of them said, I think it was Adams, that we didn't conquer this evil of slavery, you know, that we left that for the next generation. And that was Lincoln.
Yeah.
Who conquered it.
Yeah.
And then Lincoln said, now there's more.
Yeah.
There's more. So we did our part. So now we're in phase whatever. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
and I think Lincoln was probably more the assassination of Lincoln was probably more of what the pro-slave, you know, the radicals, the extremists that killed him, the conspiracy was more about what was going to follow after the war had ended, more than, okay, we just want to kill this guy who blew it up. I think it was all of the Ku Klux Klan stuff, the lynchings that were coming, the inevitable carpetbaggers that were going to go down there and scam the Southern people and take advantage of them.
Yeah,
it was all of that. And I think that's why they assassinated Lincoln, was what he put in that speech at the end that you just cited.
Is that, look, folks, our work isn't done.
Yeah.
Our work isn't done. And don't let these dead lay here in vain.
Yeah.
We have more to do. And
didn't he write that on the train?
That's a myth. I thought that so. I did a little bit of research.
Yeah.
It's a myth.
Yeah, what did you
find? The Evitt's House. He wrote like multiple versions.
Okay.
He got there and there's a place called the Evitt's House, I think it was. And he wrote most of it there.
Okay.
But not on an envelope on a train, as people would say. But it is a really short speech. I mean,
yeah,
it shows you less is more sometimes. I mean, I think it was only like 250 some words. Like
2 to 3 minutes, I think I read.
Well, you guys must remember in high school, like people memorized that.
I did. I don't recall it. I mean, bits and pieces. But
like the
speech,
the speech teams in high school, like people would memorize that.
Yeah.
And the FDR's Declaration of War.
That I didn't,
you know,
just the Gettysburg
a day, which will live in infamy and all that. Like people memorize those kinds of speeches. Yeah. I wonder if they do now.
I don't know. I don't recall our kids having to memorize that.
Yeah.
But I mean, just different priorities of what they're learning. But yeah, I mean, it was hard because it was a different language.
Yeah.
That's not how we write and speak now.
Yeah.
So it made it even harder. It's like memorizing Shakespeare.
Culturally, we're going through this thing, and I'll get into this a little bit. It's one of my big subjects I'd like to talk about today, is this idea, especially among young people, like the people that just elected, what they say, something like the 40 and under young women in New York basically elected Zohran. Mm. And basically, they say that generation thinks, like they say, if given a chance, would you leave America? The majority say yes, they don't want to be here. And it's about like they think America is poisoned the world, that we were a slave country and we have this legacy and all this stuff. And they're not proud to be Americans.
I'd love to know how they formed that opinion.
Well,
is it a lived experience or is it?
No, it's an educational experience.
It's an education. Steve reading that just now reminded me of the conflict that was in my chest as a young person when I was in high school. I was like, wow, we fought a civil war and we had slavery. And like, are we a good people? Or are we a bad people? You know, like, is America good or bad? And only when you really study things like this, mm-hmm. can you really become educated about what the virtues of America are? Yeah, we have had bad chapters and bad things have happened. But like, if you don't really dig deep into something like the Gettysburg Address and understand how the currents of history flow through that speech, you might come out like these women that voted for Zohran thinking America is a shitty, horrible country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
let me
climb up here onto my little soapbox for a second.
Because please do, Steve.
Look, we are all bad people. And this is sort of the fundamental problem with the abandonment of our Western faith, of our Christian faith.
Yes.
And not just Christian, I guess Jewish too, or our Judeo-Christian
values,
right? Our Western values.
Yeah.
Because I believe that we are all sort of fallen in a way, you know, like anybody who questions this, look in the mirror and explore all the bad, dark, miserable, horrible thoughts you've had in your life.
Sure.
And then say, is that who I am? Or is what I do who I am? Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is the internal human struggle. Our youth are sort of operating in this world like they know better. They're perfect. They wouldn't have succumbed to this horrible evil called slavery that half our country happened to succumb to back in the day, because they were just brought up with it as if it were normal. And they don't understand what you're trying to say, which is this enormous thing that our country did to get rid of it.
Yeah, a catharsis.
I mean, an enormous thing. I mean, it's like any go through a divorce and then multiply it by a million. You know, it's like you got all these obstacles in front of you. You got an entire half your nation in front of you and they're saying, no, we want it. And if you try to take it from us, we're going to secede and you're not going to have a nation anymore. I mean, think about what it took to overcome that.
Right.
So I would like to think, I would hope, I would pray that I were on the right side of that in the North.
Yeah.
But if you're born and your cousins own slaves and your aunts, it's like, you know, you're just in it and you don't know it. And what it took to overcome that, and then what Lincoln is calling everybody to do, the South included, is to change.
Yeah.
And change is slow.
Yeah. But
so look, and I think what you're saying is like the human experience is an imperfect one. And it's through these kind of adversities and stupid mistakes that you become better. So yes, we did horrible things, but because we did those horrible things, we learned and we saved the entire world,
yeah.
or at least the free world.
A few times,
right? Yeah. So put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Thank you, Steve. You know. Well said. Cheers.
And one more thing, as a trial lawyer, what is an interesting story about this Gettysburg Address, and we can lay it to rest. A guy named Wills, David Wills, bought 17 acres of pasture, and he created a cemetery, and he invited in the day a famous orator named Edward Everett, maybe not so famous anymore because nobody's heard of him.
Yeah.
He invited this guy to come talk, and then on a whim sends a letter to Lincoln, says, "Hey, you want to make a speech?" After about 2 or 3 hours of those listening to the famous orator, Edward Everett, Lincoln stands up and then slams this thing home in about 2 or 3 minutes. So it's like, 2 hours of putting people to sleep. And then you can just picture Lincoln get up there and saying 4 score, and then being done in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It's in the substance of what he said, we read today and it gives you chills.
Yeah.
And nobody remembers what the guy who talked for 2 hours said.
2 hours.
So let that be a lesson to you folks.
Yes.
And I think Walt Disney himself thought that the Gettysburg Address was so important that in the Hall of Presidents isn't that one of the features?
It wouldn't surprise me.
Animatronics.
Yeah. Well, what did he, in the article, even, I forget, he even nicknamed it his little speech or something.
His little speech. It's just crazy.
It was just little.
Again, you don't know what you have at the moment. He just put something together that fit the moment that he knew he had to do. But it's one of those, my gosh, not everything he said or wrote lives in infamy. But
No, but a lot of it does. This for sure. And anybody who's had to deliver a speech, and I'll speak to you trial lawyers, like we've all been there where, you've got something sort of prepared, maybe not, but whatever it is, and you've got to rise to that moment and deliver a closing argument, rise to that moment and deliver an opening statement or deliver an argument to the Court of Appeals or maybe the Supreme Court. And you've got to do something and you've got to rise to that occasion. I've done it many times and I have fallen on my face as many times as I've succeeded, but you understand how enormous this was for him and that he did it. Now there's great stories about Lincoln. They may be lore and not really true, but there's great stories about him as a trial lawyer, how he used to handle things in a courtroom.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating stuff. That guy, he just had an instinct for this.
Like, wow. I've never read about that. Mm. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
I'll check that out.
There's some neat stories.
Hmm. Wow.
There's a rule in cross-examination. You never ask a question that you don't know the answer to. And unless you're Abe Lincoln, and go read the story of him cross-examining somebody.
Well, that is. Let's turn then to some. Bless you, Brett. Let's turn, if we will, if you guys are okay. I'd like to discuss this Epstein, the investigative files. That became a political.
It's, like it's never over.
It never will be over. People will be questioning. Well, did the FBI really? It'll be like the JFK grassy knoll. Yeah. Like this is going to go on for 100 years. But Congress voted yesterday, 427-1. There was one guy in Louisiana that voted against the measure that calls on the FBI to release investigative files on Jeffrey Epstein, which I'm not even sure Congress has the right to do that, but. Anyway, they voted, and supposedly Trump could have just told, the Department of Justice to do this, but they passed this motion, and it's going to the Senate. And one of the concerns that Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, had always put out there, why he was opposed to releasing it, is just that. The smearing and the character assassination possibilities are so enormous because you're talking about sex with young women that were possibly induced by money or drugs or against their will and by old men, right? And on an island or in Palm Beach. And the thing is, that it's just raw information. A lot of it will be, people speculating, like talking to the police and saying, well, so-and-so and so-and-so were on his airplane. So I think maybe they enjoyed the flesh pots that Jeffrey Epstein provided. And that's really unfair because you don't know. I mean, that's just raw speculation. That is not, none of that's proven. Or else those people you hope would have been prosecuted for crimes.
Yeah, there's a lot of competing interests. And, you know, for his part, I think Trump, I don't want to say mismanaged this. Maybe that's the right word. In the media.
Yeah, maybe in the media.
I think his initial reaction should have been, look, DOJ, do what you want to do. I don't care. You know, release it if that's what you must. Release it. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
And he's sort of taking that. He's done a sort of a 180 on this now. He's doing, that's what he said. He goes, look, if they bring me a bill, I'll sign it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
it's on his desk today when the Senate's done.
And maybe it'll hurt the Democrats more than it hurts us. I who knows? So I think that's the first part is that I don't think he understood how important this issue was, not just to the Democrats, but to the people. I think the people want to know this.
Well, they got amped up on Netflix.
They got
that big series, mm-hmm. you know, like that just totally, like Dominic, whatever his name.
Well, look, it's got all the trappings of things that raise the ire.
Yeah.
You know, it's got child abuse,
sure.
sex trafficking,
yeah.
powerful people.
Yeah. Yeah. Human trafficking.
Human, yeah, getting away with stuff because you've got money.
Right.
You know, and all these things, it's got all the sex appeal. That's a bad analogy.
No, one
got
girl committed suicide. Like, there's real tragedy.
It's got all sorts of horribleness to it. And people don't like this. I've represented folks charged with these crimes. I've been on the other side of this both ways. I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
I never as a perpetrator. I don't mean that.
Yeah.
But I've worked on cases like this.
Yeah.
Both helping the government and defending people.
Yeah.
And it's always an emotionally charged mess. And the point you're trying to make is it could not be more accurate. Is that when there is when these kind of topics are at play, our country, I think people's natural response is to abandon the protections that anybody would normally get because the accusation is so horrific on its face that we don't care about that.
Right.
So, and it's really good. The logic or the lack of logic would go something like this. This is a horrible accusation that somebody would do this to a child.
Right.
Therefore the guy's guilty. Yeah. And, you know, but often, maybe more often, who knows, it's not true. You know, there are false accusations.
Right.
And to your point, I've read countless files, not in the Epstein case, but countless files in cases where there are witnesses saying whatever they can say.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's cops interviewing people and the FBI creates reports or the local police create reports and we get those reports. And a lot of times what I get is redacted. It's like so-and-so was with so-and-so on that day. And you can connect the dots, but there's no evidence that supports it.
Right.
And so there's two problems. One, if you give part of it, people will just connect those dots automatically. And that's what the Democrats are sort of doing is they're releasing this incrementally on Trump. This is all old hat with Trump.
Right.
And it's like there's nothing new I've heard. But two, if you release all of it, then you risk reputation problems,
of possibly innocent people,
victims and identity of victims.
Right.
And I get it. The Dems are now saying we've got consent of all these victims.
Let me give an example.
Like the consent is easily manipulated.
Well, let me give an example that militates against me politically. So then, you know, our viewers and listeners can judge this as fair or not. There is in the files that have already, you know, part that has already been released involves a gentleman by the name of Larry Summers. So who is Larry Summers? Larry Summers was the economic advisor for Joe Biden and Barack Obama, right? During that administration. He was also president of Harvard University. And in the Epstein files, there is a transcript of phone calls back and forth between him and Jeffrey Epstein, where he said, "Listen, I'm going to leave my wife. I have this young woman at Harvard that's a mentee of mine that's interested in me, and I want to date her. And I want your advice on how to go about entertaining or having a relationship with a young woman because he's." You know, like he was in his 60s or whatever at the time. And apparently she was from China and she was possibly an agent of the Chinese government. But be that as it may, that is the sum total of what that conversation was about. It was about a guy asking for advice on how to cheat on his wife with an upcoming divorce happening. And now that's out in the public domain. And why? None of that is a crime. Nothing in that conversation is a crime.
That's right.
Is it unethical? Possibly. Is it a little dirty?
It's dirty.
Possibly. Yeah. Is it salacious? Definitely.
Here's where
But Larry Summers is a Democrat. I am saying that kind of conversation has no business being released by the FBI. But that's the kind of shit that's in this file.
Well, we don't know what's in the file. Well, that was in the file. Yeah, that was in the file. Yeah. So look, I guess I didn't mean to cut you up, Brett.
Well, I was just going to say, but then you have Trump blowing Larry Summers' name out of proportion of this whole thing.
And Trump's doing exactly what we're talking about.
Yes. Something comes up about this to release files, Larry Summers' name comes up.
Well, and now
every damn time.
Bill Clinton.
He's going to come up.
He's coming up. You know, and it's like Trump, I don't know, like you say, he either mismanaged it or this is the biggest trap he ever laid for the Democrats.
Yeah.
Like saying, no, I don't want it released. I don't want it. He builds to a crescendo and he's like, okay, it's all your people in this thing.
Maybe he's playing 3D chess. Who knows? I would say this, and you know, Norm, off the air, we have these conversations. Norm's like, you always give this side and you give this side, but I never know exactly what you think.
Steve drives me crazy. Let me just say that because he is a professor, you know, in effect, like he does teach here. He's a great teacher, but at the end of the day, sometimes I want to know what Steve's opinion is.
All right, he won't give it. I'm going to give you my opinion.
Okay.
Look, there are pros and cons to releasing these files. We've stated some of the bad or the reasons that you do want to keep some of this private. And obviously the reasons you want some of this public is because we want accountability for public officials. Yeah. And if it's true, if the conspiracy theories are true that Epstein was an operative of our government somehow working with Israel, who knows? You can lay all that to rest. Although there is that.
Yeah.
There is that joke, the lifelong, conspiracy theorist on Kennedy. He was always like,
right.
And then he finally dies and he gets to the pearly gates and God says, look, you've lived such a noble life. I grant you one request to know anything you could possibly know. And he says, who shot Kennedy? And God says, Lee Harvey Oswald. And you know, the guy's response of course is, wow, it really does go all the way to the top. Right. So no, like it's never going to be.
That's right.
It's never going to be enough.
That's beautiful.
But it's not my joke, right? I'm just repeating what I've heard others repeat.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Both in the balance, I say let it fly. Release it all. Just, you know what? You get what you paid for here. Release it all. Because if that's where this is, just do it. Because if you're going to releasing part of it, it's not going to be enough. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be a cloud of stink around this thing until it's just released. Lay it to rest.
Yeah.
Lay it to rest. Now, my mind could be changed. My mind could be changed because if somebody says, yeah, but there's this and you don't want that, it puts Trump, it puts Clinton, it puts all the people we're talking about in a spot because they are saying, I mean, if you're one of these people that people are like, well, sure, Bill Clinton's of course been to Sax Island and all this stuff.
Right.
And if you're Bill Clinton, you haven't been there. You say, release this stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, but if you don't, and if you don't release it because there's something else there you don't want released, there's always going to be a question and there's no way around it. This sucks. We've painted ourselves into this corner. And I think the only way out is to say, all right, folks, you want it? You got it. Here it is. And if you're the one that was having the affair, sorry.
I think the reason that police departments and sheriffs and the FBI don't release investigative files, except, you know, under court order or something like that, is where a judge has gone through page by page and, you know, like you say, redacted things or ruled that something is so prejudicial that you can't, because that's just raw speculation. I think the reason is because in the minds of some people, they think this information is somehow vetted. And I've seen comments on social media that, as you say, Steve, because the accusation is, because the circumstances of Jeffrey Epstein are so outrageous, people losing millions of dollars, young women being trafficked, you know, and abused, and then, you know, the prince of whatever, the royal Prince Andrew, right, who just lost all of his royal titles, a couple weeks ago. He was stripped of that by his brother, Charles, stripped him of all his royal
because of this,
because of this. Right. And so I'm just, and maybe he did, maybe he didn't do the dirty. I don't know. But at any rate, the idea that this stuff, including we have a billionaire here in Central Ohio who almost surely is in this quote file, and it'll be people just speculating about what he did without evidence.
But they're speculating and
people,
already.
And people will impute because of the speculation. Oh, then he must have done it.
At least then it's a public debate. It's a, at least then it would be a public debate based upon all the information available. And hopefully we can discern, at least reasonable people might be able to discern the truth from it, but you're never going to get to it unless you do it. And I get it, man. There are some real downsides. Now, look, I think it's worthy of discussion. If I have a case, if I'm a prosecutor, I'm presenting a case for an indictment, you usually go to something called the grand jury. And in federal courts, they have grand juries. Grand jury is a group of our countrymen and women who vote to whether there's a crime that's been committed. And the prosecutor, the assistant United States attorneys, present all sorts of evidence to grand juries in the form of testimony, in the form of documents, arguments, or explanations by police, the whole nine yards. And it's a secret. I don't get that. If I'm defending the target of that grand jury, I'm not entitled to that information. I don't get it. So if I want grand jury testimony, I have to show something in law called a particularized need, which is a term of art. And what's a particularized need? I hope you know. If somebody can tell me, please let me know, because I've never been able to uncover successfully any grand jury testimony ever in any case. Wow. Now, there's an exception. I get it routinely when you have co-defendants snitching on each other. That's different.
Wow.
So if a co-defendant or a witness against you is snitched and he's testifying, I'll get that material. They call it Jenks or Brady material, whatever. I'll get some of that. But in the main, you don't get grand jury testimony. You just don't get it.
And that's why they say you can indict a ham sandwich.
You can indict a ham sandwich.
Because there's no defense entity there in the room.
Correct.
It's a prosecutor working directly with a jury without any counterbalance.
Yeah, and the counterbalance is the system itself. The counterbalance is going to court and defending the case. And what the government's argument here, what you're arguing here, is that we don't have that in this. If we would just release all these files, there's not like there's going to be trials where people can establish that they're not guilty or something.
Yeah.
It just goes out into the murk of the swamp and that's it. Now, look, that said, this is a unique situation. This thing has been painted into a corner and there's no way out. And if you're the government and you want to have some accountability, and I'm not going to impugn the FBI here, but I think people don't trust our law enforcement anymore.
Yeah.
And they've lost credibility.
Yeah.
And maybe this is how you get it back. Say, look, you want it? You got it.
Do you think this sets a precedent like for other high profile cases? People will say, hey, yeah, just dump the raw files out there.
Not a legal precedent, because like you said, you started this conversation this way and it really piqued my curiosity because I hadn't really thought about it. It's like, I've read a constitution a time or two. I don't recall any of the enumerated powers of the general or the legislative branch of government to say, we hereby order the Justice Department to release confidential files.
It'll be interesting.
I don't know what the lever of power is here, but so is it going to create a press? I doubt it, because when's that going to happen again?
Yeah. I mean,
let's hope not
to beat a dead horse, but you'll have stuff like the gardener at Jeffrey Epstein's mansion, right? The gardener will say, well, I saw this 16-year-old girl go into the house, and then 2 minutes later, a limousine pulled up, and I saw Mr. X, walk into the house. And then half an hour later, while I'm, doing the chopping the bushes here and raking the garden, I saw them come out, and they both had perspiration on them and towels over their shoulder.
All right. So it's relevant testimony and in the context of a bunch of other testimony.
Yeah.
But out of context, it would be.
It's just chilling.
And even the gardener. OK, so did he check her ID to know she's 16?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I'm not defending the ID.
No, but
I'm
just
saying
it's raw speculation.
Hopefully you know what you're going to get. We're going to get lots of books. I've disagreed with Alan Dershowitz on a lot of things over the years, but he's like a scholar who can dig through this, who understands the criminal justice system and how it works and the value of certain statements and the other value. I mean, somebody's going to have a tell-all book about it, and hopefully it's not just scandal.
And he was one of Epstein's lawyers for a while.
He got accused, too,
Yeah,
there was an accusation.
And he's like, well, of course I took a plane to his island. I was his freaking attorney.
I was his lawyer, yeah. And look, I mean, if somebody called me back in the day, hey, look, there's this billionaire up in New York who needs a lawyer because he's under investigation for child sex abuse crimes.
His jet will pick you up at Port Columbus.
You know, it's what I do for a living. That's a big case for me.
Yeah, right. I'll get on his plane and go.
Yeah, I had called at one point to represent another very, I'm not going to use his name, but a very unpopular figure. The left would say a very unpopular figure on the right. The right would say he's not one of ours. But anyway,
that's unpopular.
Yeah.
that is.
And it was out in DC and I got that call and I was on the phone and I was like, hell yeah, I'll do it.
Sure.
You know, I'll do it. Yeah. I mean, look, as criminal defense lawyers, we do things, I think, for three reasons, various import at any given time, money, cause, and ego.
Well, if you were a heart surgeon, mm-hmm. and it was a famous bad guy with a bad heart, I'll do the operation.
Yeah, they can fall back on the Hippocratic Oath. Look, first do no harm. I'm going to help this guy. It's my moral duty. Exactly. I'm not one to judge. I'll do what I can. Yeah. I'm not going to let him die.
Yeah.
You know, would you give Hitler a heart transplant? It's that kind of moral dilemma. You know, but I would have done it, and and I could have then been accused of taking a ride on the Epstein Express, whatever.
Yes. So, yeah. Right. Sure.
Well, another subject.
Yeah, what's it?
Okay. So there's a book coming out by an author and he's a radio personality, former CIA analyst named Buck Sexton.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And Buck is a bit of a historian and he's a brilliant guy actually. The name of his book that's coming out, in which I think we should talk about the idea of the book, not the book itself, is called Mass Delusion. That's the name of the book. And he is
Really relevant right now.
Yes. And some of the subjects that he's been talking about, what he's going to address are how these concepts sweep the world now in digital speed with the internet, that like Joseph Goebbels or Goebbels, however you want to pronounce it, from the Third Reich would be so excited about today's technology because instead of giving a speech to a group of people in Nuremberg, you know, the auditorium, and then having it televised, well, now it's worldwide on the internet. And he's talking about like things that we know swept the world that are still topical. COVID, the idea of carbon, you know, like, We're ruining the environment because of too much carbon production, man-made global warming, white men being the bane of all of history. Like if there just weren't white people and white men in particular, the world would be, you know, just all butterflies and unicorns. And then the idea of socialism solving all of man's problems. And these concepts have swept the world, just like Nazism or communism swept Germany and the USSR back in the day, or Jim Jones down in Ghana drinking the Kool-Aid, or I'll just, like, this is an oddball one that I thought of, the Shaker movement down in Kentucky, where people purposefully did not repopulate, like they had a ban on sex. So now you can buy beautiful Shaker furniture, but that they made down there in Kentucky at these Shaker villages, but there are no Shakers anymore because they didn't have children and they believe the world was coming to an end.
Yeah.
So why have children? Why subject them to the cruelty of the end of the world?
It's just crazy.
It's crazy shit.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And like we now know COVID was just a bad virus, you know, a really bad virus. And we know that carbon, you know, Michael Schellenberger came out with this great article this week, and Dr. Drew Pinsky talked about this. And there's just something really crazy going on in our culture, and maybe it's in the human.
I don't
human,
think it's anything new.
Yeah, maybe it's not new. It's in the human new. Thing.
I mean, look, this is we already talked about the human cry on Epstein. It's the same stuff.
Yeah.
It's like it's mob justice, right?
So yeah,
you get the town hue and cry going after at the local level, and it's the same thing at the national. I mean, people just this stuff happens. I think what happens now is it's a lot easier and a lot bigger.
Yeah. And it gets to us much quicker.
And much quicker.
Yeah, it does.
And it's much more expensive.
It's like a prairie fire with wind and gas.
And that's a really good point. I mean, a subtext or, you know, what he's looking at here, just how fast this stuff moves. But it gets how fast it gets disseminated, but how fast it can get poo-pooed as well. You know,
oh, I don't know about
the back
man.
And forth. Well, no, I mean, you get your counterpoints that come out. Seems to be just well, you as would fast. Hope.
You would,
well, it so, seems to be.
Because it's not based in logic. It's very hard to disassemble it.
But the same channels are available for both sides.
Well, they are. And
you know, it just comes out how so fast it comes out.
Or are they?
Let me push back on COVID because, look, there's been almost 100. Unfortunately, we had to live it. But now, if you ask, I think most people in their heart of hearts, even the hardcore COVIDers, I'll call them.
Yeah.
Would now have
to platform
the deep plat would
that,
now
there really weren't two sides.
Well, no. I think even the people that were championing the COVID line, I'll call it. I think even now would say, yeah, we probably went too far. Now they may not admit it publicly, but in their heart of hearts, I see a shift in this. So look, as I said this during COVID, I was like, look, the world's not coming to an end, guys. And everybody's saying, yeah, but everybody thinks this and they're wrong. And the people on our side.
The fear was off the hook.
I said, just give it time. The truth will come out. The truth will come out. And it sort of has. But then, you know, this is like our theory of the day, the conspiracy theories of the day, which is consistent with this book. It's like Kennedy's never been totally resolved and Epstein will never get totally resolved. I mean, there are things that will just live on forever.
Well, how about COVID? So that supplemental Obamacare coverage. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That was the central issue
in the recent shutdown,
government shutdown. Mm-hmm. And COVID has been over for what? Like 5 years now.
Yeah. This is why
it's like it never ends.
In fact, it may be one of the first I've never studied this, but it may be one of the first times in history that one of those spending provisions with a sunset deadline on it actually was enforced. And they like they fought it to the bitter end
for 41 days.
Fought it to the bitter end. It's like, look, we're going to spend even more on Obamacare because it's COVID. It's just an emergency. Don't worry. It'll end. And then when it ends, they get pissed off that it's ending and they want it to keep going to the point where they'll shut down the government and then claim we're depriving people of health care. Yeah. It's like once the opium starts, it's hard to shut it off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think right now with our young, like the idea that socialism is like a viable solution, like we have this nutty mayor that a 43-year-old lady that like lives with her parents, her parents paid for all the prenatal, you know, like everything. She's 43 years old, just got elected mayor of Seattle, has never held a job, has always worked like for an NGO. As like a counselor or something. She's now mayor of a major city and she's saying all the Mom Donnie stuff. She wants free childcare and free transportation and subsidized housing and everybody has a right to groceries and everybody. I mean, it's like, where did this concept come from? And I think we're at a tipping point where it's going to break the country.
Well, look, we had I had a conversation with somebody who used to work for me long ago, and it was about socialism and communism, and it was an interesting discussion because the individual was saying, was talking to that crowd. It was a younger generation. It was talking to that crowd. And was saying things like, so would take my position on it, which is, look, it's never worked. It's not going to work. It'll never work again. I mean, it's killed 100 million people. Don't be a fool here. Look, all you have to do is look at history.
Right. Find a place where it's worked.
And the response was back from one of his, like, you should say this. And here's what the ultimate response was. Steve's older and he had to live through the Cold War. In the 80s. So he was sort of indoctrinated by all the bad of that kind of stuff. And they just have a different perspective on socialism. Like I didn't really understand it.
As if you didn't study the Soviet Union.
Because it's their own version of socialism.
That's right. Because they're going to do it better. They're
going to do it better. Okay. But, you know, but it's, I don't want it to become the ruin of us, but it's one of those, you kind of go, okay, have at it.
You know what?
Try it.
It's going to blow, I know, up in New York. It's going to blow
if
up.
If you think it's going to work, try it. Well, we're not going to come in and save your asses when it doesn't.
Right. You're going to get it. You vote for what you get, and you're going to get it good and hard, as they say. You know, like, because maybe that's the only way they can learn.
You know, and I say that with any experiment of what you do.
Yeah.
Maybe. Well, I don't know.
I agree. You know? Now, you guys will love this. So
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
So there are some gimmicks that the Trump administration has rolled out that I was hearing Scott Bessent, the Secretary of the Treasury, on the radio, and he was talking about, he was being interviewed, and he was talking about these whiz-bang things. And I know he's bucking up some stuff he doesn't really agree with, and he's trying to make them as, like, these are little demonstration projects to show the young people that capitalism and marketplace economics work. And the three things that I wrote down out of that interview of his were this $2,000 tariff bonus, the 3-year for the babies that are born over the next 3 years, there is a program called the Trump account where the federal government is going to open up a retirement account for any baby born in the next 3 years in the stock market. Like, we as taxpayers are just giving these babies born in the next 3 years like a free IRA in effect. And then the third one is the no tax on tips. And all of those are really
no tax on
social security benefits. They're claiming Jim Jordan. And so you look at those three concepts, and those really are socialistic concepts.
Hell yeah. What's the difference between funding a baby fund?
That's right.
Then what Jeff Bezos was going to do for first time home buyers.
Exactly.
It's the same damn thing.
That's right. Yeah. It's largesse from us. For just being born or just existing.
What the hell?
You're going to get a $2,000 tariff check.
Look, why? If everybody has it has no value. I've always said that. Right. Like, it has no value because I can't then trade to you. You know, it's like there.
Yeah.
Plus the $2,000 tariff rebate, the money doesn't, the numbers don't add up.
It's a dividend.
They don't add up. Right?
Guys, it's a dividend. Yeah.
But it also backwards says, yeah, the tariffs are a tax.
It's a backhanded statement.
I'm not going to tell you it was a tax, but it is a tax. Right. But, you know, but I said initially that the money was going to be used to pay down the deficit. Now I'm going to give it to you because you're in pain because of the tax. It's like,
that's socialism.
What the hell?
That is the definition.
Well, it's not only that. And I think it's worse than that. And maybe it's the byproduct of these kind of things. It is a very simple, singular concept: inflation.
Right? Yes.
As soon as you give everybody $2,000, it's going to create inflation.
Yes.
Right.
It's an inflationary policy. Right. It's stupid. I hate these kind of little trinkety trick things. It feels like it's just like, I'm going to bribe you to get your vote. I'm not going to tax you, waiters and waitresses. Yes. So,
what I did for you.
Look what I did for you. Give me the vote.
Your college tuition.
And it's the same thing Biden did. You know, it's like, it's the same sort of hollow, stupid promise.
Right.
You just can't, it just doesn't make any sense. And Trump, I've said it, we've said it here.
Gimmicks.
He loves this kind of stuff because we're going big.
Yeah, you know,
it's like, we're going big.
Right.
I'm
going to take care of all the waitresses and the bellhops out there.
He's never been a conservative ideological guy. You know, he's Trump. And, you know, he happens to be the attack dog for the conservative movement right now. But he's not always a conservative guy.
Yeah. No, I've always likened him in a way to Clinton. You know,
lot like Clinton. Yeah.
Yeah. They both want to be loved. And they're both the guys, if you invited them to a pizza party. Right. Hmm. They would hog the pizza before anybody else.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not so sure. Trump maybe
he wouldn't
have
pizza. He'd have the Big Macs.
His speech.
And they were both very, very capable politicians.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And smart guys.
Yeah. I mean, smart guys.
Not,
like,
not dummies.
Like, in Bill, look what Bill Clinton did. I mean, look, there was a lot of stuff that ideologically I disagreed
of
with.
Of course.
But
right.
We had a balanced budget.
Yeah.
Yes.
We had a balanced budget.
He did because work with Newt Gingrich.
He worked with Newt across the aisle.
That's true.
And said, all right, here's where the country wants. That's what we're going to deliver.
The era of big government.
And
is
he
over.
Did.
A little premature, Bill.
And well, and then it just blew. I mean, and it both Republicans and Democrats after that just blew it out of anything, out of the stratosphere.
Now today, I don't know if you heard this, but Linda McMahon, the wife of Vince, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she is Secretary of Education. So she announced at a presser that they are, in fact, going to deconstruct the Department of Education and that they have the executive orders and legislation all teed up to do it. And they're going to turn over any leftover Department of Ed responsibilities, which I guess, like, for example, would be the education loans, to other existing departments of the federal government. And they're going to, she is planning to be the last Secretary of Education.
When's her last day then? Has she put a last day to it?
Well, I guess when she's done, when it's wound down, you know.
That's what you're asking rhetorically,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't think she needs the money. It's like Scott Bessent.
It's sort of like the Elon Musk thing, right?
But it's a power seat. You know, I'm just saying.
She's giving up power. And I, you know.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's what Brett's point is. Maybe.
I know.
Maybe.
I wonder. She's a politician.
To set up that expectation and then not follow through, I don't think Trump would allow that.
It's certainly a step in the right direction.
I think he intends to get rid of the Department of Education.
Well, and it is Trump's call, not hers.
Yes.
Ultimately.
That's right.
Ultimately. Yeah. But no, you make a great, it's back to the three motivators in life, money, power, and ego, right? So it's like, they already got the money, but she still has power and ego.
But if you devolve this power, like over what the contents of lessons plans are going to be, when that got nationalized,
every kid got left behind after that.
Exactly. Hmm. When you devolve the power from DC back to the states, I'm pretty excited.
Well, let's kick around people. Like I've given this some thought lately, and I think it's worthy of a little bit of a discussion. Like, why do that? Like, why is it better? And I'm asking just to start the conversation.
Mm, sure.
Like why is it not so good that the federal government is cramming down the educational requirements and instead we're giving it back to the states and in turn, really the local school boards?
Yeah.
And why is that? And I've got some theories on it, but.
Well, let's hear them, Steve. Go ahead.
I think when you have these kind of things at the local community level, there is inherent accountability for it. If your high school is not producing in whatever, you know, Mayberry, USA,
mm-hmm.
then there's accountability for that. People don't like it. They're not going to tolerate it. But when it's this mystical government in the sky, it says, look, we're just teaching what everybody tells us to teach. You know, we're following the rule, blah, 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 blah. We got these labor unions, whatever. Like you can't, like you see these clips of people in school boards and they're just howling at the moon because there's no local accountability for it. And I think once you have some local accountability for it, we will see improvement in the educational system. The other problem with it is we are relegating the curriculum to our political actors. I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are letting our political figures dictate what our kids learn in school.
Yeah.
And if you think our political figures aren't political, then all you need to do is listen to what we just said. They are political figures.
Sure. Well, and it also, to your point, it's a really good point because it diffuses the large companies that come in and talk to these legislators. Throw money at them going, this is the way we should be teaching.
And
our
sell
kids.
Them a
and sell them a program.
Oh, sell follow them the money on all this stuff. Yeah, it's the phrase of the year, phrase of the decade about we're going to teach them this, going to teach them that. It
like
isn't
base 10 math, all exact, this stuff. Like,
it
whatever.
Is a company that's come in with a new idea that has bought out a legislator to force this through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now it diffuses that it's all of a sudden. Wow,
we don't have any authority for that.
We got to talk to 50 states now.
Mm-hmm.
We got to talk to zillions of school boards and such. Mm-hmm.
And if something catches on, it's because it's good.
Yes.
Not because it's required.
And it will catch fire because those teachers and school boards and schools talk to each other. Mm-hmm. And if it works, they're trying to find solutions.
So anybody.
That's a really good point.
Anybody who raised a kid in the 90s and 2000s probably remembers something called whole language reading.
Yeah, you've talked about this before and how terrible it was.
And whole language reading was basically a concept that says don't sound it out. It's not running boy, running boy. Remember those little things we used to do?
Sure.
Or A is for apple. It don't sound it out. Memorize a bunch of these words, buzzwords, I'll call them. But, and, it, the, memorize the words. And then eventually everything just clicks. Well, the problem with that is everything clicks for about 80% of the people. And the other 20%, it doesn't click and may never click.
Because English is the hardest language on this God's green earth.
That's right.
Ultimately.
And in whole language reading was a program like what you're talking about. And it was crammed down wholesale. And it created almost a generation of kids who are illiterate. And the problem is once you get third or fourth grade and those words get bigger and you don't know how to read, you're stuck. You can't get it back like you can fourth or fifth grade, rather. You know, and there were programs that developed out of this called Orton-Gillingham, which is basically phonetic reading. Remember Hooked on Phonics coming out, those little things? Sure. That was a response to this nonsense because kids couldn't read.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of program.
Steve, was that a thing that was sold?
Yeah.
So there was money to be made.
We need a fact checker, but I think it was Ohio State that did it. Ohio was among the last to let it go. There's probably still teaching whole language.
Well, and that kind of explains too, when I went to high school, I loved Latin. Mm-hmm. I loved Latin class.
Because it informs English.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I can look at a $20 word and I can pretty much tell you probably I'll be in the ballpark of what it means.
Yep. And why it means
I loved Latin for that. And Latin classes seem to be kind of going away.
Yeah.
You don't have that anymore. I mean, when my kids went to high school, the Latin class was gone.
I will say.
Which I hated because I don't know how the professions like yours, medical, and maybe a couple other professions should not be told you have to go through Latin class.
But not only that.
Because your whole world's based in Latin.
Not only that, but basic grammar.
Yeah.
Like learn. Look, and they're not teaching this anymore in high school or grade school. I don't think they're teaching basic grammar, like object, indirect object, and diagramming sentences,
probably
all this.
I suppose not. I don't know.
But I was awful. I dropped French in college, and then I went and took Latin instead. And because I took Latin, everything in French made sense.
Yes.
Everything in French. So I immediately understood.
Because you went to base one.
It gave me a vocabulary to understand what they were trying to teach me in French.
Yeah.
You know, it gave me a vocabulary to understand it. What are the declensions in Latin you would call it?
I know of one school here in Columbus that requires Latin, and that's St. Charles.
Well, good.
You have to take Latin freshman year in the high school.
I think it's a lack of teachers teaching it too. So, I think a little bit of that.
And when I tell people upstairs, you know, that I do this every now and then, I have a quiz. I was like, no, that's a gerund. And they don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
And they never learned it. So they don't, and it's not that they don't understand, they can understand the concept, but they don't have the vocabulary to understand the concept because they're not getting taught.
Yeah.
And
guys, the other school, remember the Covington kid in DC that talked to the older Indian guy?
Yeah, right.
And
they
said he was mocking him, and in fact, he wasn't. But at any rate, he attended Covington Latin. And that's another school where you must take Latin. I mean, it's the name of the school.
Covington. Wow, that's wild.
Just real quick, guys, a couple of quick hits. There is a series on Netflix that I want to recommend to all Ohioans. It will make you proud to be from Ohio. It's called Death by Lightning.
I've heard of this.
It's a four-part series about President James Garfield, who was a congressman from Ohio, and he went to the Republican National Convention in Chicago and gave a speech to nominate an Ohioan, a senator named, Secretary of Treasury, I think he was, in the Grant administration, who is now defected from Grant, and another Ohioan, right, Grant. He defected and he was running for president, and Garfield nominated him with a stem winder of a speech, right? And people became so enthralled with his speech, they ended up nominating him.
So they threw
President Grant, basically threw him out of office because he was there to get renominated, right? And so Garfield got elected president. And there was this little, like, operative, kind of like a fanboy, Charles Guiteau, that kept trying to get some kind of an official job or a position, first in the campaign and then later in the Garfield administration. And, of course, 3 months into his administration, James Garfield was assassinated by the fanboy. So what is cool, we open the show with the Gettysburg Address. And what is so cool about James Garfield was that he was a Lincoln knight. You know, he was a Lincoln devotee. And he wanted to follow on after the scandalous Grant administration with a clean Lincoln agenda of civil rights, of recognition. So he had people coming in like Frederick Douglass and African-American congressmen were coming in to visit him. And he was assuring them that the U.S. government was going to enforce the fresh amendments that had just been passed, you know, following the Civil War, like Civil, the 14th.
Yeah, 12, 13, 14.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
So I would recommend it. I watched it. You guys would love it.
I haven't seen it yet.
You would really enjoy it.
There is a great book I read about this, though. The Destiny of the Republic, Tale of Madness, Medicine, and Murder of a President, Candace Millard. I read this. It looks like it came out in 2011, but what it made me think of that. Yeah. But what's interesting about the Garfield assassination is that the bullet didn't kill him.
No, sepsis did.
And the sepsis killed him because the, quote, government, the best doctors of the time went in there and they were probing that wound with their fingers. And they like, had they have done nothing, Garfield lives.
Yeah, but they did that to Lincoln, too, didn't they?
Yeah,
they started probing some
stuff on
Lincoln,
that
too,
was in his brain. There was, he couldn't come back.
They did, but the same concept, right?
So same
like,
concept.
This, he deserves the most important medicine there is. And the irony is, like, if he had just gotten the average healthcare there, all of us got, be like sitting on in the bed with Doc.
Yeah,
Jones coming down from around the corner.
Right.
And they just said, "Yeah, bandage him up, wash it off. Maybe not wash it off.
Yeah,
but he probably survives it.
He was a very principled man, and the Netflix series makes him appear to be a very modest, very stoic kind of guy. He was a farmer, and he wasn't a very good farmer. Like, he was just okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He was kind of like an average guy, but yet well read. Very balanced. He ran his campaign from Ohio. He did not go around the country campaigning because he really didn't want to be president. Yeah.
Well,
and ultimately kind of makes the best president.
Exactly. And that time you could do that.
Yeah.
You could just, you know, the press disseminated it and he just lived in Ohio because Ohio was the
heart of it all.
The funniest
character in this series is that guy from Parks and Rec. The big fat dude that plays kind of the cranky conservative.
Right, right.
He plays Chester Arthur. And Chester Arthur is a complete POS. Like, but James Garfield in 90 days turned Chester Arthur from a total criminal of the Customs House of New York City, a total criminal on the take, to a halfway decent president because he was his vice president.
Mm-hmm.
And took over after the assassination.
Right. So, we'll wrap it up with that, guys. All right. So this is Common Sense Ohio. You can check all our backlog, commonsenseohioshow.com. You got a comment, you got a question, you want us to cover a topic, you can leave it at that website or right in the socials here, brought to you by Harper Plus, coming at you right from the middle each and every week till now.
All right.
Are you an entrepreneur who doesn't know when to pick up the phone or get out the keyboard to contact your CPA?
A lot of people are like that. And one of those things that you have to figure out when is the right time to do that is when you feel like you don't know what's going on. How much money am I making? How do I pay my taxes? I'm running my business out of my checkbook and I have no clue what's going on. I don't know if my employees are making me money. I don't know if my products are making money. I don't know which way I'm going. I'm upside down. I can't concentrate or can't think about anything other than where the heck am I, instead of thinking, how do I grow and continue on my business? That's when you should call.
So if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to have a tax question in regards to that, drop it in the comments and we'll try to get back to you.